The following is a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.
Hello, everyone. Welcome in as students of the game. My name is Alex Bauman, and I'm joined by my co-host today, Dre Oldenburg. Dre, I missed you last week. Had to do this show solo, but glad to have you back and have somebody to bounce some ideas off of.
Absolutely.
Especially with the topics we're going to have today.
Yeah,
Starting with some college football here. EA Sports released the gameplay trailer for the upcoming EA Sports College Football 25 video game. I think that's the biggest thing we've been waiting on. We've spent the past couple of weeks talking about certain aspects of the game, like the modes they're going to have, what's kind of going on with it, and we've been waiting on the gameplay trailer. Me and Nathan specifically have been waiting on that trailer to make our final decision on whether or not we're going to pre-order the game. And I think with what I've seen, at least, and what I've read with the gameplay trailer, I'm definitely going to be pre-ordering it here in the near future, whether that be today or sometime this week, because it looked really good. But what were your thoughts on what you saw in that gameplay trailer?
For sure. I'm kind of with you, Nathan, on that aspect of I've been waiting. As a big gamer, as a big sports gamer as well, I've been waiting for this game for 11 years, played NCAA 14 way too many hours and been waiting for this game for a long, long time. Basically, my whole childhood was playing NCAA 14. And this game is exciting. And I like how EA Sports is doing this. I like how they released the trailer a couple weeks ago. It was just kind of a reveal trailer. You get to see the game, got to see some of the traditions, some of the atmospheres. We weren't really able to see any modes or any true gameplay, but it was really cool to watch. But then now they're going to go through and do these deep dives like they just did with the gameplay trailer. It's a gameplay deep dive. They'll do a Road to Glory deep dive and a Dynasty deep dive. And then along with the trailer comes a big blog or a big blog post that, goes more in depth in the information and that sort of thing. And I think that's the perfect way to do this, get people excited about this game. They definitely have gotten me excited about this game. Speaking on the gameplay trailer that you just mentioned, Alex, it was narrated by Kirk Herbstreit, who's one of the announcers once again. And then everything that he went through in that gameplay trailer, talking about the wear and tear system, showing the new passing mechanics and the new the defensive mechanics with the switch stick. I think that's going to break some controllers. the new kicking meter, a lot of the stadium pulse, how the home field advantage is going to take into place. This game needs to be a love letter to college football and to college sports in general. And I think from what we've seen so far, it looks like EA is doing a pretty good job at getting me excited for it.
Yeah, just to go over some of the things Dre kind of touched on there, starting with if you're playing with Virginia Tech, there will not be Enter Sandman. Unfortunately, they did not get the rights to that song or Jump Around for Wisconsin, but they were able to get Mo Bamba to play, as well as Zombie Nation, Sandstorm, and Tsunami. So when you go play Penn State at Beaver Stadium, you will be having the time of your life. And I'm assuming you play with the freshman quarterback with like the low of the low FBS program. Your screen will probably be shaking vigorously the entire game.
Yeah.
And if there's an ability, which I assume there would be in Dynasty to create a custom schedule, I think the first team I'd put on it would be Penn State. Just be able to experience what that looks like and how the players play, what the shaking looks like. Because in NCAA 14, there wasn't much shaking. Your routes would kind of shake and stuff like that. But the way they're advertising this is your screen's going to be all over the place.
Yeah.
Some other things there, the wave at Iowa games at the start of the second quarter will be featured, and there will be a few options for each team uniform-wise, and Oregon will have more than 20 uniform options. So they're keeping it with tradition here and having teams with all their uniform options, especially Oregon, which, as we know, has so many uniform options, it's absurd.
Yeah.
Hopefully they can include all of them. I'm not sure if they will be able to. And the weather will also be an important factor in the game. In years past, especially with Madden, it felt like weather really wasn't as a big a deal. You would still have players making crazy catches and stuff like that. But the way they're making this sound is if you're playing in the snow, it's going to be like you're playing in the snow in real life, where you're not going to be able to really throw the ball effectively. The running's going to be a little bit difficult. You're going to be slipping all over the place. Not going to have that same amount of, I guess, burst coming out of the backfield. So like weather having a good aspect here, making it more realistic. And there will be a 2-minute warning in college football. There's a lot of people on Twitter that were able to see this trailer and some gameplay and were kind of worried that they were getting the reskin of Madden, and this was kind of like an overplay of it, or a overplay of it. And it was not. It was just they didn't know that the 2-minute warning wasn't college football now,
That's
and
right.
it's in the game. There'll also be a victory formation feature. Unfortunately, Miami does not have that ability to do in the game. It just ties everybody else. Some offensive things. You can create a combination of any hot route, hurry up almost instantly, enhance pump fakes, shorten or extend any route. So when you make a hot route, you can sort of, they showed in the trailer, you can make it go longer when you do like a curl or something or a post. You can make it do the cut shorter. So there's a lot of revamp there. Revamp with the passing. You can call tons of new RPOs, options, trick plays, different types of option pitches. You can fake pitch. I'm kind of in there interested to see what that looks like. A larger selection of juke moves, user playmaker, and on-screen pass blocking display. And then there'll be an overhaul of the throw power, which not only impacts the distance of the throw, but how hard one is throwing to their intended target. And then with the defensive, to kind of balance this out, the wear and tear feature, which you touched on, Gray, with depending on where these players hit your offensive players, there'll be some wear and tear on the parts of their body. And in the trailer, they kind of showed it. They highlighted Jackson Arnold, the Oklahoma quarterback, getting plastered multiple times by Texas players. Not sure how the Oklahoma fans felt about that, but that's sort of their example that they showed. You can bluff coverages, the switch stick, which Trey kind of touched on, bluff option read keys, harder kicking meter. I'm not sure how that's going to go over. I thought the kicking meter has been fine, but they're trying to make it more difficult. Understand. Run commit only, send players in the box, and then harder to score in bad weather, as I kind of touched on with run whenever weather. Great. Any of those things make you even more excited about the game?
I mean, tons of it. I really like what they've done offensively. You completely revamp it. And I like the point that you made about the difference between Madden. When you were talking about the 2-minute warning, people were scared of it being Madden. And that's been the scare all along with this being an EA game. You know, people thought it was going to be just a college version of Madden, and they were going to really go hard on the ultimate team mode, and they were, you know, going to make it pay to win. And they were just, I mean, Madden's the same game every year, just with new rosters and, you know, slightly different gameplay mechanics. It's the same game. And that's what we were afraid of as the NCAA 14 community. That's what we were afraid of. But everything you just touched on, it's not in Madden. You know, you can't bluff your coverage in Madden. There's no wear and tear system in Madden. The kicking meter has been the same for 8 years in Madden. And so everybody knows how to do it, and it's super easy. You're not gonna miss a kick. The weather doesn't take that much of effect, just like you mentioned. The home field advantage, I mean, that's the biggest difference between the pros and college, is there's not a big home field advantage. And there's not a huge talent gap between the best player in the NFL and the worst player in the NFL. But in college, those two things, the home field advantage and the difference in talent gap, are much, much different. And it sounds like EA has completely made that a priority to make this feel like a completely different game, a completely different atmosphere and environment in game and in the modes. You know, we'll learn more about the modes and those deep dives, just like I mentioned. But I'm super excited about this. I'm really excited about the defensive thing as well. You know, being able to bluff your coverages and with the abilities that they were showing, it sounded like, you know, the quarterback, if you have a really good quarterback, you know, and it's a good thing. You've got a huge advantage. You're going to be able to tell the defense's coverage no matter what. But bluffing your coverage, having a really good safety or a really good cornerback, you know, on the end that can outsmart. I mean, this game is incredibly detailed. I cannot wait to learn more about it. I can't wait to play it. Like, July needs to get here fast.
Yeah, just to sort of give more detail on what Gray's talking about with bluffing coverage. There's a disguise coverage mechanic where basically you can choose a play and you can select a coverage shell to show. So you could show cover two, but really be in cover three. You could be in cover zero, but actually be in cover four, all that type of thing. And then in switch stick is say you're stuck on the defensive tackle or defensive lineman, which I'm pretty sure most people that have played in Madden have been in that situation where you're stuck. You're trying to switch your players around, do different things pre-snap, and then the player on the other side of the football snaps it, and you're stuck on that guy, and you're trying to switch to the middle linebacker or the sub linebacker or whatever, and you can't. You switch to the safety out in China or something like that. Well, this gives you the ability, if you're stuck on that guy, to flick your right stick up, and you'll be able to, in theory, flick right back to the middle linebacker. Or if you're stuck on a corner, flick to the safety you want to switch to, or you can switch your defensive lineman. So this gives you an easier ability to switch players rather than hitting the circle button if you're on PlayStation and praying you get put on the right player and don't get screwed over, which has done wonders to me. This happens all the time.
All the time. Yep.
One thing I didn't touch on is there, instead of superstar abilities, which are in Madden, they're doing another abilities a system here in NCAA where there's 80 different abilities that are tied into mental and physicals. There's four tiers with unique effects. So in theory, there's about 320 abilities after those original 80. I'm interested to see once again what that looks like. They probably release that when they get either in the Road to Glory deep dive or in the Dynasty Mode deep dive here soon. Sort of give a basic outline they kind of detailed with the Road to Glory, and then I'll go into the Dynasty Mode after Greg gives his thoughts on what I went over. The Road to Glory in the game is a 10 to 20 hour story mode with you starting in college and not high school, which is what you originally did in the other NCAA games. Kind of a disappointment there where you're not able to start at high school and build your rep and then go off to college. Instead of that, you'll be able to choose between being a 5-star, 4-star, 3-star, or 2-star. The 5-star starts at 79 overall, 4-star's at 75, 3-star's at 70, and then 2-star's at 65. And understandably, if you're a 2-star, you're really going to have to spend a lot of time in practice, perfecting your craft, trying to get playing time. And if you're a 5-star, you basically just have to win the position battle and you'll get the job. So I think it gives you a lot of leeway and creativity on how you play the mode. I know it's just going to be a 10 to 20 hour mode, but what they went over with how diverse it is, you're not going to get bored with it after one time because you can make different decisions. You have to manage your time each week and decide how you balance your schedule between five areas of focus, those being academics, leadership, health, training, and brand. And you can be ruled academically ineligible. And there's a whole laundry list of what each of those things look like. If you just look up EA Sports and go to their blog, you can definitely find a lot more details pertaining to that. Great. The positions you can choose from are quarterback, running back, wide receiver, linebacker, and cornerback. Not much different than what Madden is in the superstar mode. But with what you've read, with how diverse and how in-depth this mode is going to be, do you think it's going to end up being better than what superstar mode has been for Madden?
Oh, for sure. Oh, for sure. I think it's more detailed. The superstar mode for Madden, they've tried to make it simple. Then they tried to make it this whole story where you have to watch 4 hours of cutscenes every day. And then they've tried to do all sorts of stuff with the superstar mode Madden. And I think they're doing too much of what they shouldn't. I would say that this Road to Glory mode, obviously not starting in high school, a lot of people were bummed about that. I don't think it will have that big of a thing. I think you choosing which rating you want to start off as, whether a 5-star to a 2-star, is going to be a major decision. And I think this mode is going to be all about decisions that you make when you're, just like you said, Alex, focusing on your schedule, whether it's academics, your leadership, the health, the training, or you wanted to build your brand. It's called brand exposure. It's not called NIL, but that's what it is. It's called building your name. That's what you do. That's what these college players have to live with. They have to focus on these things. So I think making it detailed and making it decision oriented is going to be fun. It's going to be a challenge for a lot of people. It's going to be different than the Road to Glory. You're not just going to go out and try to get coach trust from NCAA 14 and build up your rep and try and get the starting job. No, there's a lot more detail and decisions in this mode. I'm interested to hear more about it when they go through the Road to Glory deep dive, when we get to see some of the on-screen things of it, see some of the decisions pan out, whether a good way or in a bad way. and then get more details about it in the blog. But I'm very interested in this mode. I wasn't a huge Road to Glory player in the NCAA 14. Obviously, I did play it because I had to play that game for 11 years. But I was more of a Dynasty person. But I'm excited about this.
Yeah, one thing to not be disappointed about is even though you have to maintain your GPA, you do not have to take tests in the game that has
Thank
been
goodness.
leaked to everybody. All you have to do is allocate how much you're going to study, and that's the entirety of what academics is. And if you don't allocate enough time to prepare yourself for these tests, then you're going to get in trouble with academics and maybe ruled academic ineligible. So there's no test here. So if you're out of college and all that, you don't have to worry about having to go back and take a college exam for the first time in 10, 20 years, depending on how old you are when you load up the game. All right, moving on to some Dynasty stuff. There wasn't a whole lot released on this compared to what was released on Road to Glory, but there'll be a deep dive like we've both mentioned. One thing, the draft classes cannot be exported to Madden 25. In games past, like in NCAA 14, you could import the draft classes from that game to that Madden from that generation. Not happening here. There's no NIL in Dynasty mode, so there will not be competing pitches. You won't have to be, if you're at Texas State, competing with Kirby Smart in Georgia for a player and using NIL as the motivator. Players will be tasked with grading the coach as normal, providing a scheme for offense and defense, and then they have to choose the type of style they will be, whether that will be motivator, recruiter, or tactician. That's very similar to what Madden has, where you choose between two types of coaches. I forget exactly what they are, but there's like a staff builder and a team builder, I think. So very, very similar to that. The skill trees are back. You can fire and hire coordinators. I don't believe you could do that in past iterations of NCAA. So that's good. I'm pretty sure if Nathan was here and Bill O'Brien was still the head offensive coordinator of Alabama and he went to go coach for Alabama, that would probably be the first thing he would do is fire that man. And there will be custom conferences. Great, not a whole lot there for Dynasty, but what are your thoughts on those details?
Yeah, from what we've heard about Dynasty, it sounds like they're very, very focused on this mode. It sounded like that was the biggest thing for them to perfect when they've been preparing this game for over 2 years, I believe. They've been working on this game and working on it and working on it and working on it. And it sounds like their focus is mostly on this Dynasty mode. And I'm excited for it. I'm really excited to get the deep dive trailer, see it. Hear about it, get more details for it. I'm super excited from what we've seen so far. Them not being NIL, NIL, they can't use that in this game. So in Road to Glory, it's more about building up your name, which NIL is, but you can't, just like you said, it can't be a bidding war. There is no salary cap yet in the NCAA. So I like that they did that, and the fact that you're going to have to really focus on scheme, and you can now do the hiring the coordinators, and the transfer portal is going to play a huge deal, and how you focus to either recruit, high school guys or transfer portal. You're gonna have to manage that. It sounds like you're a lot like Road to Glory in the fact that it's going to be very decision oriented, which is going to make it new and it's going to make it fresh, and you're not going to get bored with it. You're not going to have this basically have to do the same thing in every single dynasty that you have. Your dynasty for Louisiana Monroe may be completely different than your dynasty for SMU. Your dynasty for Auburn may be very different from your dynasty from Texas A&M. It's very, very, different and decision oriented, and every decision you make throughout your entire dynasty is going to affect your win loss. It's going to affect your legacy. It's going to affect your future in that dynasty. So, and I'm excited for it. I cannot wait to see more about this. Just like I said when we were talking about Road to Glory, I'm more of a dynasty guy. I can't wait to play this mode.
Hopefully it lives up to the expectations and everything that's been released, because EA has let me down before. I know it's
Oh
let you down before. So,
gosh.
but what I've heard, what we've seen, there's no way it lets us down.
No.
All right, hopping over to college basketball here. Last week, you did have the deadline for the NBA draft, whether to come back to college or stay in the draft. Some key guys returning to college: Alabama's Mark Sears and Jaren Stevenson, UConn's Alex Caravan, Arizona's Caleb Love, and then Arkansas's John L. Davis all returned, as well as Wake Forest's Hunter Salas, Florida's Walter Clayton Jr., You also had JT Toppin, who was at New Mexico, ended up transferring to Texas Tech. He's back. Jackson Robinson from BYU comes back and follows his coach from BYU to Kentucky. You had Matthew Morrell from Ole Miss come back. Some guys like Coleman Hawkins, who are still in the portal, and you going on Yinsu as well in the portal. So we have some guys coming back as that are in the portal, some guys that are on teams. Great. Looking at all those guys that I kind of mentioned and the rest of the guys on that list that you see, who is the most impactful coming back outside of Mark Sears and Jaren Stevenson?
Okay, outside of Mark Sears, because Mark Sears is the most impactful. I look at two guys. I look at Alex Karaban at UConn. I think UConn's going to be very new this year. They're still very, very talented. They're still experienced. They're returning a lot of guys off their bench last year, but they are losing a lot. Losing, stud center Donovan Clingan, losing Stephon Castle, losing, what's
Cam
his name?
Spencer,
Cam
Tristan
Spencer. That's right.
Newton.
Yeah, losing Tristan Newton as well. You're basically losing your national championship team. As I know, it's not going to affect Dan Hurley and that UConn team because I said the exact same thing at this point last year. And look at what they did this year. But I think Alex Karaban is a huge one to get back. You get back a senior leader. You get back a guy who's been to two national championship, won two national championships now. Get a guy who can improve and be more of a stretch three, four in that offense. I think UConn will be a little bit more space this year. I think, as good as a shooter as Cam Spencer was, they weren't very well spaced this past year with Stephon Castle and Donovan Clingan. I think it was one of their weaknesses, maybe their only weakness, to be honest. And then the other one I look at is Walter Clayton Jr. coming back from Florida. That's huge. That is so huge for Todd Golden. Get a guy like that to come back to your school. That is massive. I put that on the level of Mark Sears, to be honest. Walter Clayton Jr. is not near as impactful on the court as Mark Sears is, but Todd Golden is in the very early years of his rebuild of Florida. I think the future of him at Florida is very, very bright. If I'm Florida, I'm very, very scared about, some other schools looking at Todd Golden as a future steal from Florida. And I really like Todd Golden there. Getting Walter Clayton Jr. back, I think is huge for Florida. Getting a veteran guard to come back to the SEC, where there is going to be a ton of veteran guards like John L. Davis at Arkansas, like Mark Sears at Alabama, like Denver Jones and JP Pegues at Auburn, like you name it. Every school, they're going to have veteran, good, experienced guards. And getting Clayton Jr. back, who's a stud of a shooter as well, is huge for Florida.
Yeah, I was going to say Walter Clayton too. I know they didn't win the first round last year, ended up losing to Colorado on a prayer shot, but Walter Clayton Jr. Throughout that entire game, throughout the entire year, was Florida's go-to guy in the clutch. And to have him back, like you said, Gray, it's not on the level of Mark Sears, but it's very close to it. So to get that veteran leader back, that guy in the clutch you look to go take that three, go make that shot, go do whatever he needs to get done, it's huge for Todd Golden. Because like you said, the SEC is full of veteran guards, and to have your veteran leader back to lead this team that Todd Golden has built through the portal is huge. And I'm excited to see what he does with the new players he's got around him and with Todd Golden in another year at the helm there. Another guy I think is going to be huge is John L. Davis for John Calipari at Arkansas in his first year. John L. Davis, after that run with FAU last year, I think going into this year, he was expected to be a lottery pick, but FAU did not have the season everybody was expecting, did not win the AAC. UAB ended up doing that in the tournament. I think USF did it in the regular season. So it was kind of a disappointing year for FAU. But John L. Davis, he's going to be playing much better competition in the SEC, going to be able to prove himself. And I think he's going to be one of the better wing guard players going into this year. And I think he will prove it under Coach Cal. He'll be kind of that Antonio Reeves veteran presence on this team because Cal is bringing over some guys from Kentucky. DJ Wagner's one of them. So to have a guy like John L. Davis, who has played in the tournament, gone far in the tournament, made the Final Four, can be that veteran presence is huge for him in his first year at Arkansas.
For sure.
All right, let's just talk about the elephant in the room here, Gray. Use it every time, but Alabama players. Mark Sears comes back to Alabama. What does that mean for the Crimson Tide going into next year?
It takes them from a Sweet 16 sub Elite 8 team to a team that probably should be competing for a national championship in March. I'm not even going to mention Jaren Stevenson's a good player. I think he'd be good depth, but that is not the talk of the room here. Getting Mark Sears back is huge. I think Mark Sears is an NBA player. I think if Mark Sears was 3 inches taller, he's going higher than Stephon Castle and all those guys in the draft this year. I thought the same way about Sharif Cooper back a couple of years ago coming out of Auburn. I was like, if he's 3 inches taller, he's going where Kobe White went. It's the same player. Mark Sears is an NBA player. Getting him back to Alabama not only means that Alabama will have the deepest team in college basketball, but they got their superstar back. Grant Nelson's not a superstar. He played really well in the tournament, especially when Alabama was out in Los Angeles against North Carolina and Clemson. He played very, very well. He is not the superstar, and he would not be the superstar on this upcoming team. It's hard to look at the freshmen and say, y'all need to be the superstar. You're not bringing in a Brandon Miller. I really like Darion Reed and LeBaron Fylon, and I think they're going to be great players for Alabama this year, but you need a superstar to compete for a national championship. That's what every national champion has had. And you can go back and just name them. Mark Sears is the superstar, and getting Mark Sears back changes this team. I think Alabama's the best team in the SEC coming into this year. We talk about getting an All-American. There are three teams in the country now getting an All-American back. Only three. Because Alex Caravan wasn't an All-American. There's only three All-Americans coming back. And it's RJ Davis in North Carolina, it's Jahni Broome at Auburn, and it's Mark Sears at Alabama. Those three guys have got to take over. Oh, Hunter, four teams. Hunter Dickinson's coming back to Kansas. Goodness gracious.
Hard to
For his,
forget him.
yeah, 100th year to play basketball. But that's absolutely huge. Getting an All-American back away from the NBA. And I think a lot of people say, I saw a lot of people on Twitter say this had a lot to do with NIL and that sort of thing. I completely disagree. I don't think this had anything to do with NIL. I think this had to do with, I don't know if I wouldn't say Mark Sears has anything more to prove at Alabama than took Alabama to the Final Four, took Alabama to SEC championships. He took Alabama to the number one seed in the tournament, even though that was Brandon Miller's team. He was on that squad. He averaged 20 points a game this year. He's an All-American. He didn't have any more to prove, but he does have more to prove to those people in the NBA rooms. So that's why he's coming back this year. I would say the exact same thing about RJ Davis. I would say the exact same thing about Jahni Broome. I'd say the exact same thing about Hunter Dickinson. They're all coming back to prove what they're going to be in the NBA, and it's going to be huge for Alabama.
Tornadoes, it's no longer let me make the SEC championship and win the SEC championship. That's the highlight of our season. This year, it's NCAA championship or bust. I think that's clear with Mark Sears coming back. As crazy as that is to say as an Alabama fan, you have this deep roster. You have five star after five star. You bring back Mark Sears. You bring back Grant Nelson, Latrell Wrightsell. You bring in Cliff from Rutgers. You bring in Chris Youngblood from USF, who was the co-player of the year in the AAC. You bring in Houston Millett from Pepperdine. He was an experienced three-point shooter. I mean, this is championship or bust for Nate Oates. And I'm not talking about SEC. NCAA win the whole entire thing. They are easily far and away the best team in the country right now, looking at their roster on paper. Now it can change, especially when we get into the regular season and we see what happens when the team's on the court. But on paper, right now, this team is the best one in the country. Kansas is a very close second, depending on what Hubert Davis does in the portal. UNC might be a close third, but right now, Alabama is far and away the number one team in the country. It's going to come down to do they stumble out of the gate like last year, lose to these teams they shouldn't lose to, lose very close games to teams like Purdue and Creighton, or do they come out of the gate firing on all cylinders and don't look back the entire season? And you have a similar run to what Kentucky had back a long time ago with Coach Cal, or what Wichita State had in their undefeated regular season run. I know Wichita State didn't win the NCAA championship, but they went on that amazing run in the regular season. So will they do that? I think Nate Oates, what he's done, what he's proved, especially last year making the Final Four with a team that a lot of people had written off after they had some early losses, like I mentioned. But it's getting a lot of players back. Nate Oates is a proven winner. He has the coaching style to succeed, and I think he does it. I hope he does it for his sake, because there's going to be a lot of angry Alabama fans if they do not get farther than the Final Four, because that's expectation now. You've set the expectation is the Final Four. You have to exceed it or get there at least. Bruce Pearl, he set that expectation a while ago with Auburn. He hasn't got back to that point, which has led some Auburn fans disappointed. Hopefully Nate Oates doesn't encounter that setback, but we will see. And then just talking about Mark Sears' impact on the court. You just talk about the Clemson game by itself. If Mark Sears didn't exist in that Clemson game, Alabama doesn't win that at all. There's absolutely no way. He made 7 3-pointers, and down the stretch, it was all Mark Sears, off the ball, on the ball. Some 3-pointers he made. I mean, you listen to Chris Stewart's call that game, it was like, where this is otherworldly. We have never seen this before, a player do this in an Alabama jersey outside of somebody like Brandon Miller, at least in my lifetime. So, Mark, to get Mark Sears back, it's the number one thing in the country. It's the number one get in the country, whether it be transfer, portal, recruit. I mean, this is the best thing that could happen to any team, to get Mark Sears back. And then you look at Jaren Stevenson here. Like you said, Gray, it's not that big of a thing, but to have Stevenson back, he's going to bring in experience. I know he's only a sophomore, and he would be an incoming freshman this year, but he brings experience. He had that big game against North Carolina. So, I mean, he has experience playing good in the tournament, and he's a good stretch big, which Nate Oates really loves to use. And he'll give guys like Aiden Sherrell and Darion Reed, Naz Cunningham, somebody to learn from and sort of just have a buddy to talk about what they're experiencing. And just talk about the recruits. If 10 years ago you looked at me and said, yeah, Alabama's going to have 2 5-stars probably coming off the bench, I would have laughed you out of the room. I mean, Nate Oates has done an amazing job here. You cannot discredit him. You cannot laugh at him or anything. I mean, dude, it is an amazing, amazing recruiter, an amazing coach. And like I said, championship or bust for him. But as an Alabama fan, you cannot hate on what he's done at a program that has been the dumps since a long, long time, since the 90s. Talking about some guys that stayed in the draft, you had Johnny Furphy from Kansas stay in, and David Jones from Memphis both stay in. I think David Jones is a bit of a surprise for Penny Hardaway in Memphis. I know they're kind of scrambling right now, trying to find their go-to guy, because David Jones was that. If you look at their games last year, it was basically David Jones doing 90% of their offense. So to lose him and not have really any replacement, I mean, I'm interested to see what Penny Hardaway does to address it. And then I think the biggest thing, I hate to give this spotlight here, but if I didn't, I would be stupid. Bronny James stays in the draft. And let's just sit here and talk about this, Gray. He had workouts scheduled with 10 teams, declined 8 of them, and only scheduled them with 2 teams, those being the Lakers and the Suns. And then his agent, Rich Paul, which is LeBron's agent, comes out and says Bronny won't accept a 2-way contract offer. What are your thoughts on what's gone on with Bronny James thus far and him staying in the draft, Gray?
I don't even know. I don't even know. Look, I watched USC this year. USC came to Auburn, came to Neville Arena. So I got to see Bronny James play. And don't think he didn't score. He didn't score. He came off the
Surprise.
bench. Auburn dominated that game. And the one possession where Bronny was given his chance, Katie Johnson took it right from him. So, and Katie Johnson plays for George Mason. So here's what I'm going to say. Look, this kid, Bronny James, is not a bad basketball player. He's a Division I basketball player, for sure. For sure. Does he need multiple years in Division I? Absolutely. He needs to develop. He needs to get better on his outside shooting. He needs to get better at his attacking the rim. And he absolutely needs to get better on the defensive end. He's got the build for it. He's a 6'6 guard. He's hyper athletic. I mean, look where his genes come from. But he needs to develop, and he needs the attention off of him. He needs to go to a school where he can play Division I competitive college basketball for multiple years, and have a season where he averages 15 or 16, and he's more relied on offensively, and you know he takes steps defensively and gets stronger, works in the weight room a lot more, and gets the attention away from him. I hate that he can't do that because his last name is James. I hate that. I hate that for him, and I hate that for really all of these kids who have dads who are as good as LeBron James is in the NBA. You can't fault LeBron. LeBron's trying to get this kid in the NBA with him. But who you have to fault is the media and the expectation for him. This guy does not need five star. He was not a five star. He was not a five star. He was not a super stud. He did not average 30 points a game in high school like all these five stars did. He's not there yet. He's got to develop. And, you know, I mentioned this a couple of weeks ago when we were talking about Colorado and we were talking about Shedeur Sanders, and NIL has ruined those kids. And you know who I'm going to apologize, you know who needs to be apologized, to be honest, even though they just hired Eric Musselman, is the school. USC needs to be apologized. Because don't deserve that. Bronny doesn't deserve that. You blame Rich Paul.
Don't get me started.
This is ridiculous. You won't accept a two-way contract? I hope you accept a Turkey contract or a Serbia contract, because he's not going to get an NBA contract. The only way he gets an NBA contract is if LeBron James comes out and says, I will 100% go to the team that drafts him. Then hell, Hawks, I'd draft him number one. Get LeBron James. This is crazy. He should have gone back to college. He should have gone to the transfer portal because I don't think USC was the right spot for him, because I think USC is too much in the spotlight in Southern California. I think he should have gone to a Big 12 school, should have gone to like a Baylor or something. Come off the bench for Scott Drew and stay there, develop, start your junior and senior year, develop defensively. That would have been the perfect, path for Bronny James in my eyes, in my opinion. But I think it's crazy. I feel sorry for the kid. He's not going to get drafted unless LeBron comes out and says what I just said. It's such a stupid situation. I hate NIL and I hate attention like this because it just ruins these, it's ruining this kid's career.
What world do we live in? Well, we're sitting here talking about Bronny James getting drafted and Mark Sears wouldn't be getting drafted if he stayed in the draft. What world are we living in? Mark Sears averaged 21 and a half points per game and shot almost 45% from three last year.
All
And
America.
Bronny James averaged, I think, 5 points and shot like 30% from the field and like 10% from three, 20% from three, and 60% from the free throw line. I
Yeah.
mean, what were, I know Bronny James, like you said, Gray, has a lot of athletic intangibles you look at, but what world are we living in where you look at Mark Sears, who has drawn comps to Jalen Brunson, who Jalen Brunson just made an all NBA team
Yeah.
and is the leader of the New York Knicks, and we're not going to draft him. We'll go ahead and draft Bronny James. Where are we at in society, especially in the NBA? And for, I don't know if Bronny did this or LeBron or whoever advised him to decline these offers on these workouts, to have the gumption to say no to eight NBA teams and say, let me just work out for the Lakers and the Suns. And then also come out as his agent and say he's not going to accept a two-way offer. Who do you think you are? I know you're LeBron James's son, but good Lord. What, like, once again, what are we doing? What are we doing? Like you said, once again, Gray, he's going to have to come out. He's going to be a developmental prospect. And where do developmental prospects go when they come to the NBA? The G League.
G League.
Where's the best way for him to get that? The two-way contract. I don't think a team's going to come sign him onto their 15-man roster
No.
and take a roster spot up where he's going to be spending what I would assume would be the entirety of the year in the G League, when they can get somebody else on a two-way contract to do the exact same thing who probably has very similar intangibles to Bronny James, who maybe did better than Bronny James did in college. Why would they do that? Why would they pick Bronny over him? I personally wouldn't if I was an NBA GM. If somebody drafts Bronny James in the first or second round as a GM and he doesn't pan out, that's probably going to be a fireable offense to be that stupid. Yeah. And like you said, I hate it for the kid because he has all these expectations on him. And if his name wasn't Bronny James, LeBron James Jr., there we wouldn't be sitting here talking about him bashing the kid. So I hate to bash him, but what's going on in the media and what's been released and what he's done decision-making wise, it's hard not to ignore it. It's really hard not to, and to criticize what's been going on. So I really hate it for the kid, but what happens happens.
Yeah, you're exactly right. And I'm gonna mention this as well. You know, you mentioned the Alabama perspective. He should not be picked over Mark Sears. I've seen in every big board and every mock draft and every single, you know, post and everything that the quote unquote experts and scouts are talking about, that Bronny James is higher than Jalen Williams. What? Okay. What are we doing? What are we doing? I mean, we got guys coming back to college. Caleb Love, John L. Davis, just like he was a lottery pick. He was projected lottery. Walter Clayton Jr. Everybody on that list would have been picked higher, in my opinion, would have been picked higher. And then you got these seniors that can't come back to college, like Jalen Williams, who are, you know, working out for every NBA team that they can possibly work out for, soaring up the draft boards. You know, Jalen Williams went from like in the 200s in the draft board to now I believe he's on the ESPN big board. He's like in the mid 80s. He's flying up boards right now because he's working out for these teams. These scouts are seeing him now. Bronny's not doing that, but he's going up the boards. His last name's James. That's so crazy. I feel sorry for the kid. I'm not going to bash the kid. I don't think he has anything to do with this. You know, he entered the transfer portal. You know, when he entered the draft, he also entered the transfer portal. You know, a lot of guys did that. John L. Davis did that. You know, when he entered the draft, I think he had every intention to go into the transfer portal. I think this is solely Rich Paul and the media pushing him towards the NBA, and not even in the right way. Just like you said, it's a two-way contract. It's where he can go develop in the developmental league. You know, it used to be called the D League. It used to be called the Developmental League before Gatorade bought it and made it the G League. It was the Developmental League. That's what it's for. It's for guys like him.
Yeah. And like, I think Rich Paul is probably the main guy behind this. I don't think LeBron would advise his son this way. I don't think a dad would do that to his son personally.
Oh, yeah.
Experiencing what's going on with my dad and I'm assuming you had the same experience with your dad.
Yeah.
There's just no way a father would willingly do this to their son.
No.
I mean, even LeBron's been outspoken about trying to get his son drafted, which people have been criticizing him for that. I don't mind that. If I was LeBron and Bronny was my son, I'd be doing the same exact thing, trying to get my son out there, trying to get him drafted, get him attention. So I can't criticize LeBron for doing what any good father would do to get their son a job.
Yeah. Yeah. And if there's one thing I will not bash LeBron James on, you know, I don't really like him as a basketball player. I've never been a huge fan of him. I would disagree with him in a lot of certain aspects of life, but he is a great father. He is in that community, in that area of this country, that's a rare occurrence, as a rare thing. And he is a great father to his sons and his daughters. And I would never think that he would be any a part of this too. I think, just like I said, I think it's the agent and I think it's the media.
All right, let's move on to our last story here, Gray. Trying to get away from LeBron and Bronny and all that stuff here. Still saying the NBA though. The Washington Wizards removed the interim tag and hired Brian Keefe as the team's next head coach. But Washington was 7-36 at the time when they fired Wes Unseld Jr. and then hired or named Keefe the interim. and then went 8-31 the rest of the way and finished with a franchise record 67 losses. But you know what? The Washington Wizards say, yeah, we're good with that. Finishing 8-31 of the season, Keith, you're going to be the next head coach. Great, you're a Charlotte Hornets fan. You had the most experience with coaching letdowns and having losing teams. So, what are your thoughts on the Wizards? I guess almost appears to be settling for Keith here.
Yeah, it sounds like the Wizards have just put themselves in a hole. Just a massive hole over the past few years. Even going back to the Bradley Beal days and the John Wall days, they have put themselves in a hole. The trade when they got Paul Pierce put them in a hole at the time. And Paul Pierce, leaves or retires or whatever. And then they trade Bradley Beal and they get like Kyle Kuzma, then they get Jordan Poole in. They have just put themselves in a hole. And until they land a top pick or score on a pick, like a lot of the teams in their picking range have done in the past few years and have gotten them out of that, they're going to be in the same hole. Now, last year they took Koulibaly, who I don't have anything against him. I think he is going to be a good player, but that's the Wizards have no room to be drafting guys as a project right now. They need to
I
draft
guess
guys
they
to come
do.
in and play and score. They don't have that. Right now, their team is incredibly inconsistent. If I thought of the two most inconsistent players in the NBA, I'd be willing to bet a lot of people would land on Kyle Kuzma and Jordan Poole. They're incredibly inconsistent. They finished with a franchise record 67 losses last year. Wes Unseld wasn't the problem. He's not a good coach, but he wasn't the issue. He's a better player. They're in a massive hole. And they do have the second pick in this year's draft right behind the Hawks. They need to score. They also have a pick late in the first round. I believe it's 26th. They need to score there. And then they need to go out and build because they have no depth at all. They have no superstar. Their superstars are the most inconsistent players I've ever watched. As a Charlotte fan, it's hard to think that somebody's really in a worse situation than you, but the Wizards are by far in a worse situation than the Charlotte Hornets right now. And, they do have the second overall pick, but at least the Hornets have some promising young players like Brandon Miller and Mark Williams and maybe LaMelo Ball and some guys like that. The Wizards just don't. And I'm fine with the Wizards staying bad. They're in our division. But they've got to get out of this hole that they've dug themselves in.
Let me just read you the last few first round picks that the Wizards have had here, Gray. Rui
Gosh.
Hachimura, Denny Avdija, Corey Kispert, Johnny Davis, Bilal Coulibaly.
That's horrible. That's so bad.
That is generational trash right there, talent wise. Rui Hachimura and Denny Avdija are probably the best two guys there. I think Denny Avdija had a pretty good year last year for the Wizards, but when you're playing with G Leaguers and most inconsistent players on the planet,
Got to,
I would expect you to be pretty good. You trade Rui Hachimura and he's doing okay in LA. Corey Kispert, I don't know where he's at. He didn't really do he hasn't done much.
I didn't think he was an NBA player when he was at Gonzaga. I was like,
Johnny Davis.
oh God.
Where is he? He spends 95% of the season in the G League. And when he comes and plays for the Wizards, you want to scratch your eyes out. It's bad. So you can't fault coaching here. Granted, Wes Unseld Jr. wasn't great. Ryan O'Keefe, I don't think is that great of a head coach. It remains to be seen in a full season. The locker room appears to be behind him. Jordan Poole said he likes him. Landry Shamet said they're behind him. So maybe that's a big reason he got to stay. Maybe that's a maybe that'll be a big reason there's a resurgence for the Wizards. But it's not going to come with the coaching. It's not going to coaching's an important part, but when you're
Get some
drafting
players
this
in there.
bad, you can't expect coaches to win you basketball games. You waste John Wall and Bradley Beal. Absolutely waste two of the most talented players in your franchise's history. Draft Otto Porter Jr. which granted that draft class wasn't great, so I'll give him the pass there. But you never built around John Wall and Bradley Beal. You never put great pieces around him. You trade for like a 37-year-old Paul Pierce. Wow, man. Ooh. I'm shivering over here, Gray. I mean, this franchise has not drafted well, has not brought in good players in free agency. Granted, they probably wouldn't. I mean, it's Washington, the Washington Wizards. You're not going to get a big free agency lure there. You haven't brought in good coaches for a while now. I mean, you had Scott Brooks, Wes Unseld, you had Brian Keefe. You can go down the list. I mean, this franchise is in the dumpster right now. They're very similar to the Pistons in that aspect. But like the Pistons and like the Hornets, who are both kind of similar in that in the aspect of not being great teams. Like you mentioned, Gray, they have promising prospects. Brandon Miller, LaMelo Ball, Mark Williams for the Hornets, Cade Cunningham, Jaden Ivey, Jalen Duren for the Pistons. I could the Wizards, you have Denny Avdia, who's older. I think he's like 26 or 27. So I really don't consider him a prospect or any sort of developmental piece you can build a team around or have for the long term. Bilal Coulibaly showed flashes last year. So maybe he's a good 3-and-D piece you have, but you don't have a cornerstone player to have built around. Kyle Kuzma's not that guy. Jordan Poole sure is not that guy. So I'm praying for Washington Wizards fans. Hope it works out for you guys, because right now y'all are just not having a good time.
Yeah, I'm very interested to see who they pick with the second overall selection. I think it definitely depends on who the Hawks pick at number one. If the Hawks go with what everybody thinks they're going with and go with Alex Sarr, do they take the other Frenchman, Richard, or do they have, just like I said, just when we started talking about them, do they have the luxury to be able to take somebody who's not proven? Somebody who is a prospect and a true developmental piece. I mean, hey, go take Bronny James if you want to. See if your luck finds out and LeBron says, you know what, I'm going to go from Los Angeles to Washington. I'm going to go from the Lakers to the Wizards.
Well, Michael Jordan.
Yeah.
I don't think LeBron would do that to himself, because all that would be compared to is, oh, LeBron's pulling a Michael Jordan. And I don't think LeBron can live it himself doing that.
That's true, yeah.
Well, all right. That's all the time we have for today. Thank you for listening and watching Students of the Game.
This has been a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.